Have you heard about the American missionary who was killed seeking to bring the gospel to unreached people? What are we to make of that?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, in just a few days, I leave, God willing, for India, trip number 26 there, approaching 200 overseas trips that I've had the privilege of being on over the years now, and 26 trips in 26 years to India. And the question of bringing the gospel to those who've never heard it, bringing the gospel to the unreached, is one that's always on my mind. We have grads from our ministry school serving around the world, and some of them seek to bring the gospel to those who've never heard it. But what about the ethics of this? What about the charge that Christian missionaries are just colonizing, trying to extend Western ways in other parts of the world? It's best to leave people to their indigenous culture. And the big news about an American young man, 27 years old, speared to death by islanders, North Sentinel Islands, off of the coast of India. What about his actions? Was he wise? Is this the kind of thing we should be doing? Is it a foolish waste of life? We want to talk about these issues, life and death issues, really, today on The Line of Fire. I am Michael Brown, and it's my great honor and joy to spend this time with you. And I really believe we have some things that will help sort a lot of these issues out for you. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884. That is the number to call. I've got a lot to share about this. I want to share things that I hope will inspire you and encourage you and challenge you to go deeper in the Lord. And I want to be sensitive to issues that come up, questions that come up. So John Allen Chow, 27-year-old American follower of Jesus, who gave his life trying to bring the gospel to unreached tribal people and an island on which they've lived for many thousands of years, and North Sentinel Islands, the Sentinelese people. And according to all accounts, he was speared to death for seeking to bring the gospel there. Now, before reading about this in the news, I was informed by a colleague because a friend of ours, a coworker of ours, knew the situation intimately. I can't say more than that. I won't say more than that. He knew the situation intimately, was very much aware of what was happening. And we heard first through him, because his heart was broken, that his friend was killed seeking to bring the gospel to these people. Then I read about it. Then I began to see headline stories about this. And there's a lot of controversy about this man's actions. He's with the Lord now. He is already enjoying the smile of heaven. And I believe that much good will come out of his willing sacrifice to bring the good news to these people. But there's a lot of controversy within and without the Christian world about this. So we want to talk about this constructively and again in a way that I think will edify you, challenge you, and help you. There's an article on theroot.com, Christian Colonizers Demand Justice for Christian Who Attempted to Colonize an Indigenous Tribe. So Jay Connor, writing this article on Sunday, is speaking about a Christian organization that's calling for justice against those who killed Scott Allen Chow. And in his mind, Christians who go to share the gospel with these unreached people groups are colonizers. All right? Does that headline sound familiar at all? Last week we learned of John Allen Chow, a Bible-singing missionary who was killed by an isolated indigenous tribe after he illegally, emphasize, invaded their remote island. And what reason did he have for illegally invading their remote island? According to CNN, it was to convert the island's inhabitants into Christians, of course. And it's a very mocking, negative article. And it quotes International Christian Concern, a fine Christian organization that stands with persecuted believers around the world. We here at International Christian Concern are extremely concerned by the reports of an American missionary being murdered in India's Andaman and Nicobar Islands. Our thoughts and prayers go out both to John's family and friends. A full investigation must be launched into this murder, and those responsible must be brought to justice. And this article says, murder? Wait, what? And on it goes, speaking against International Christian Concern and against the missionary that sought to bring these people the gospel. Let me first dispel some myths, okay? The reason that Christian missionaries risk their lives, uproot their families, go to the ends of the earth to share the good news is not to colonize people. It is not to colonize people. In fact, the thought would be so foreign to them that I'd have to explain to them what some critics think because it's so foreign from their thinking. They go there out of love for God, love for people. Well, I've had the privilege of cumulatively spending several years of my life overseas bringing the gospel, but I am not a full-time missionary in that regard. I've not left family behind, friends behind, career behind, comforts of America behind to go and live among a foreign people and become part of the culture there, learn the language, learn the customs, live among the people for years and years, perhaps spend the rest of my life there, or even give my life for those people. But I have many of my friends and colleagues that that's what they've done for decades and decades, some for well over 40 years. They started as young people, now they're in their 60s, and they're still on the field. And that's where they plan to die, is in a foreign land. And many grads from our ministry school have been out on the field 12 years, 15 years, 18 years, and they've been there. They come back to America for a while, raise funds for what they're doing, or back to their home country, and go back out and serve. And some very sacrificially. And some risking health, and most giving up comforts, and some even giving their lives. I'm talking about of our own spiritual family. I know why they go, and I know what's moved missionaries around the world over the centuries. They want to bring the good news of Jesus to people that don't know him. They want to bring light into darkness. They want to bring hope into hopelessness. They want to bring a message of forgiveness of sins. They want to give a key to eternal life to people who don't have it. I have friends and colleagues, some grads from a ministry school and a colleague, an older German colleague, that have lived among previously unreached people. Oh, let me take it further. Have lived among people who previously were unknown. In other words, they were basically living like Stone Age people, completely isolated from all society. No one knew they existed. I'm thinking specifically of the Fayu people. So you go to Indonesia and then travel from Indonesia to reach them. I believe it was around World War II when surveying was being done, whatever exactly happened, that these tribal people were discovered. No one knew they existed. I know the German brother who moved there with his wife and children to live among them. He went there, they were naked people. With bones in their noses, and there was tribal warfare. They were killing each other. He went and lived among them. His family, they learned the language. They would little by little communicate, and then little by little share the gospel. And it was transforming and life-giving for those people. Then some of our grads gone and lived among them. I have at my home this incredible, I mean, it's, well, these are smaller people, right? This massive bow and these arrows and you know, I don't know, the twine the things are made from, but, you know, you get like crocodile teeth on the end of arrows or a necklace with crocodile teeth. These grads from our ministry school that lived among them for a while, they bartered with the tribal chief. They bartered a mosquito net. They would give him a mosquito net if he gave him a set of bow and arrows, which he did, and then they successfully brought back to the States. They had this long bag they carried it in, and right towards the end, some of the arrows started cutting through the bag, but somehow they were able to bring the whole thing back and present it to me as a gift of love. So I'm not just speaking here, you know, random, you know, we know people living this out, doing it, as I speak, serving, doing these things, and some who, within the last year, have also brought the gospel to people, knowing if they go there, they might die. Yeah, and they'll send prayer requests. Please pray for me. Please pray for me. These are people we support financially. By the way, you support us, you're supporting them. I just want to let you know this, that they are going and risking their lives for the gospel. We support them. You support us, you're supporting them as well. I can't give you names for obvious reason. But they go because they love people. And some of them are foreigners already. Some of them are from a particular country. And they go to others in their country that have not been reached with the gospel. They're not trying to impose Western civilization on them. There's not a colonizing bone in their body. They're there to serve. They're there to give. They're there to help. One of my colleagues shared going into Latin America and bringing the gospel to people who had never heard the gospel before, various tribal peoples and living in outlying areas. And once they hear the message and understand and believe, he said they always ask the same first question. When did this happen? When did this Jesus die for us? And they explain, and sometimes, you know, you have some cultures where they count up to five and you have to communicate like that. Some you don't have a concept of a month, you know, it's moons, or they refer to years the same way we do. So you have to find how they describe it, but somehow you find the way to describe to them, you're talking about something that goes back, like, you know, generation after generation, way back, like 2000 years. And then they say, why did it take so long to bring us the message? Because our ancestors died without hope. See, it's not like they're saying, hey, we're doing great, man. What are you guys bothering us for? We're doing great. We're thriving. We're enjoying the blessing of God and intimacy with God. And we have a sense of being right with God. And when we die, we know we're with him. And no, many, there's this you know, torment, fear. And many times the tribes are anything but just perfect paradise. We're intruding it. No, it's often not like that. It's warfare and often disease and often all kinds of, and the norm would be all kinds of intense spiritual blindness. Missionaries come out of love and they give themselves to reach people with the gospel. That's why they do what they do. All right, a whole lot more to talk about, and it's going to come down to you and me in an individual, personal way before the show's out. We'll be right back on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire. John Alan Chow with the Lord now. Obviously, his family and friends mourn for him, but his family said, we don't believe that people should be prosecuted. There should be no attempt to punish the islanders who speared him to death, according to what we know. You shouldn't punish the fishermen who illegally transported him there. He asked them to do it. So they're reaching out and speaking with compassion. Others are blasting. I'm looking at this article on BBC.com. Missionaries serving God or playing God. John Alan Chow, who gave his life knowing what was going to happen, and I'll share some of the details in a moment. He said, you guys might think I'm crazy and all this, but I think it's worth it to declare Jesus to these people. Others responded harshly. Questions asked in the article, is missionary work a form of imperialism? Caitlin Lowry wrote on Facebook in the days after his death, I used to be a missionary. I thought I was doing God's work, but if I'm being honest, I was doing work that made me feel good. This is white supremacy. This is colonization. Hey, Caitlin, I don't know you, don't know anything about you, but I'll tell you this, you're projecting. Whatever's happening in your own life, you're projecting. Maybe you did things to make you feel good, but the idea this is white supremacy colonization is as wrong as it is ugly and utterly unrelated to the truth. And in point of fact, again, I know folks who are indigenous. In other words, they are of this particular culture. They are of this particular ethnicity. And they are going to reach others in their culture who have not yet heard the gospel. It's got nothing to do with white anything. It's got nothing to do with colonization. You say, well, hang on. Wait a second. Aren't there people over the years that have colonized nations, expanded their empires in the name of Christianity? Yeah, those were colonizers who used Christianity for their purposes. That's wrong, and it has happened. Those are colonizers who thought that their ways were the ways that everyone had to live by, and along with it, there was Christianity. But those that go to bring the gospel don't go to make, say, Indians or Africans into Americans. They don't go to make blacks into whites or browns into whites or reds into whites. They go, regardless of ethnicity, culture, color, because they love people. And the more they stand out as different, often the harder it is for them to bring the message. But they go and they earn the favor of the people by loving them and serving them and caring for them. Well, they do it. It's ulterior motive. No, the same love that causes them to feed the poor, the same love that causes them to clothe the naked, the same love that moves them to rescue children from human trafficking, the same love that moves them to establish schools to educate the uneducated, that same love is the love that moves them and motivates them to share Jesus with others. That's a fact. And that's why people do what they do. Say, well, it's self-interest. Oh, okay. So you're going to say that no human being on the planet then does anything without some level of self-interest. You know, you could say to me, well, you know, you're on the radio because you like talking. Yeah, I'm not on the radio to fulfill something in me. And we don't raise the money to be on the radio to fulfill something in me. We do it to fulfill a divine calling and ultimately serve you. So maybe you're out there and everything you do is about you and selfish motivation. Well, don't put that on somebody else. And when you read what John Allen Chau wrote, and again, we know folks intimately involved. We know folks that know him personally, that know his love for the Lord, that know his desire to bring the gospel to those who never heard, that know that he knew the risks involved. All right? It's clear what motivated him. These people need Jesus. These people are living in spiritual darkness, and they need to experience the love of God. They need to experience salvation. There's something far better for them in this world and in the world to come. So the fact that some have used Christianity for colonization, it's happened over the centuries, has nothing to do with those who bring the gospel to bring the gospel and those who sacrifice out of love for others. Now, here's what we know from the accounts. And I'm just going to refer to public accounts, not to any other information that I have from behind the scenes. So from all public accounts, we know that he made arrangements with fishermen to bring him over to the island because it is illegal for outsiders to have contact with people on the island. Say, well, why? Well, one reason is health issues. In other words, if you have been living in isolation for millennia, you are not exposed to certain viruses, certain bacteria, a common cold could be a plague level event there. Something else, if you're infected with someone and you go among people, that could potentially happen. Here, I mean, what happened with Europeans, the Spanish coming over, say, to Mexico and things like that? What happened with diseases of people dying, you know, from something you're hardy here, but someone comes from the outside, it kills them. They're hardy, they come with something that kills you. So that's one reason. So if someone went there with a health issue, it could be contagious and could spread and could literally wipe people out. That's one reason. Another is the desire not to push contemporary civilization on other people. You know, how do you feel when you read about, say, the rainforests in Latin America and South America, and the rainforest is being decimated because the population is growing, 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 and they're expanding, and, you know, big business is expanding, expanding, and so, okay, the wildlife's getting wiped out, and all these things are happening, but then you find out, oh, here's an indigenous tribal people, and they've lived untouched by the outside world, have just been discovered. And, you know, if a plane comes by, that's like some giant monster bird that they should try to shoot with a bow and arrow. That's how they've been living. Well, do we now want to make them into Westerners? Do we now want to convert them to our ways and say, hey, here's an iPhone. We just set up a cell tower in your area. One of my trips to India, I spoke to about 10,000 young people, actually ranging from teens up until 30s and some older. But my whole message was a warning about the seductions of the West, a warning about the seductions of American culture and materialism. And there was a Hindu police officer there, a high-level police officer, who talked to the brother we worked with in India and was so glad to hear a Westerner coming in and warning about those things. Now, I want these Hindu people to know Jesus. I want them to know the love of God through the Messiah. That's my heart desire. Although when I'm in India, my purpose there is not proselytizing. I'm meeting with my friends and pouring into leaders that are there in private meetings and things like that, and doing graduation, you know, those kinds of things. But my heart's desire is to see them come to know the Lord, the Hindus there. But here's a Hindu leader who was thrilled to hear me warning about Western culture, materialism, sexual decadence and things like that. That as much as India is a Hindu culture, it's also a traditional Asian culture. And in that sense, the sexual ethic would be higher. You'd have a much higher percentage, for example, of women getting married who are virgins, far, 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 far higher than you would in the West. But you see deterioration of values and things breaking down as more of our decadent Western culture or hyper-materialistic Western culture comes in. So many want to protect these groups, these peoples, from the outside world, from the outside influence, and think it would be negative. However, the gospel first transcends culture. The gospel transcends culture. The gospel fits in any culture, and then when the culture is sinful and wrong, can transform. So it transcends, and it has the ability to transform. And then let's realize that missionaries around the world, hundreds of thousands of them, not Americans and not Westerners. Missionaries are going out from Africa all around the world, going out from Korea all around the world, going out from other nations around the world. So let's not make it all a white American affair. Well, thank God for every white American missionary living sacrificially to bring the gospel, just like thank God for every person of color from whatever country living sacrificially to bring the gospel. Thank God for them. We honor them. We appreciate them. We esteem them. But let's not confuse the two. John Chow was not going to the Sentinelese people to make them American or to introduce them to Western culture. His goal was to bring Jesus to them. Now, not only so, for the most part, the lifespan of these people is going to be much shorter. And in many cases, there's tribal violence. In some, there are brutal customs that are very abusive to women, things like that. Maybe with the gospel coming in and transformation coming in, and I can attest to this with my own eyes in terms of things I've seen in India where the gospel's gone to unreached, it's actually raised the quality of life. And instead of just a hut that the wind and rain are going to destroy, there's actually a small little house there. It's tiny, smaller than your own bedroom, and a whole family lives there, but it's there. And they've got clean water now. And they've learned certain hygiene things that have extended their lives. This is all just service, and it's good. It's for the good of the people. And it also comes with the gospel. All right, what about the wisdom of going somewhere where you know it might cost you your life? And how does this relate to each of us individually? That's what we'll take up when we come back right here on the Line of Fire today. If you'd like to call, if you have a comment or question, 866-348-7884.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What would motivate you, 27 years old, good health, the whole life and future ahead of you, what would motivate you to risk your life to go to people who've never heard the message of Jesus? What would motivate you to go to them knowing that they might well kill you? I'll tell you, as Paul wrote to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 5, it's the love of Christ, the love of Messiah that compels us, that controls us, that constrains us, that stirs us to action. It is love that says, no matter the cost, I've got to bring the good news. And friends, I work with people. We support people who do this, who live in these situations where they are literally risking our lives. And if you say, I'd love to support some of them, support us. We support them. Yesterday was so-called Giving Tuesday. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all of you who gave and helped. We appreciate it. We're inching towards our goals for the year end and to lift some burdens off and to get us going with strength into the new year financially. And you help us do that. This is, we can't just like go out and earn more money. We do what we do in ministry and pray in the funds. But thank you, those who gave. And if you didn't give yesterday, give today. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate. Join us. Join our team. Thank you. But as you give, the first fruits of everything you give goes to support our missionaries around the world. And some of them, I can't give you their names, details, anything. Some of them are risking their lives on a regular basis to bring the gospel. Some of them have literally given their lives bringing the gospel. These are people close to us. Most of them graduates from our own ministry school, people we sat and poured into for many hours. And that fire so burned in their hearts, they said, I've got to go. I've got to go and give my life. And didn't Jesus say, if you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for my sake in the gospel, you find it? Meaning, if you're just going to try to hold on and do what's convenient and have people like you, you've lost your life. If you say, hey, I live for the gospel. If I live or die, I live for the gospel. Now you found it. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I know there's some questions about the propriety of what John Allen Chau did last week, seeking to reach the unreached, knowing it could cost him his life. Was he foolish? The first day that he tried to make contact with some of the islanders on the North Sentinel Islands under Indian supervision, the nation of India, that the first day they actually speared him, but the spear went into his Bible. And he's written about it. He's written his own notes. He said he was doing this to establish the kingdom of Jesus on the island. And he said, don't blame the natives if I'm killed. He said, I've been so nice to them. Why they're so angry and so aggressive. So he knew what was happening. He said, if you want me to actually get shot or even killed with an arrow, then so be it. This is what he said to the Lord. I think I could be more useful alive, though. So think of this. Come on. It's you. Picture that's you right now. And you know, you had a spear thrown at you by people who are known to be hostile outsiders. So you come, they're gonna kill you. All right? They're gonna kill you. You get speared one day, but it hits your Bible. Now you leave. You now come back the next day. It's pretty good chance you're gonna be killed. But you want to tell them about Jesus. What about your life? What about your career? What about your future? What about all the good things you could do? What about your family? Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls in the ground and dies, it remains alone. If it dies, it bears much fruit. You say, I believe that, but was this a wise thing to do? Well, let's talk about this in a constructive way as we honor our brother who, out of love for Jesus and love for the lost, willingly gave his life. And I believe something good and lasting will come out of this. I believe others will be inspired. And I believe questions will be asked about what motivates people to do what they do. But let's address some questions that do come up. We'll start in St. Augustine, Florida. Joel, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing.
So, you know, we know that evangelism comes with, you know, governmental persecution, but how important is it, though, if we're going to these protected areas, that we follow government protocol if it's allowed, and then if there is government resistance, when then should we go around the government and then go out into these unreached areas?
Got it. Yes. So I have a colleague that we support that does this very thing, goes to people that have never heard and risks his life in doing it with his teams. He'll email us and say, I'm about to do this. And I can't say what part of the world or anymore for obvious reasons. But in doing so, he has to break some laws. He has to violate the laws that say you can't interact with these people. However, at the same time, the country in which he lives has laws against the gospel already. In other words, on a regular basis, he is either breaking the law or breaking local custom with sharing the gospel. So it's not like, say, in America, where I could just, you know, talk to anybody anywhere. I mean, unless I'm in private property kind of thing, you know, but I can just talk to someone freely. But then they say, by the way, you cannot do this particular thing. It's illegal. You have to break and enter to do that. Well, now that's a separate issue. Is it right or wrong? Should I? Shouldn't I? But when it's a matter of the country already is persecuting you, the country already is against you, the country is already killing Christians, and then they have laws that nobody can reach these people, you're already breaking the law by preaching the gospel anyway. So in situations like that, you say, when the law is stopping me from doing good, with all respect, I have to obey God. You say, I have to obey God rather than man. Just like the Hebrew midwives wouldn't take the lives of the baby boys that were being born. They feared God, so they broke and violated the edict of Pharaoh because they feared God. Just like the three Hebrew young men in Daniel 3 and then Daniel himself in Daniel 6, there were edicts against praying to the one God. There were edicts saying you must bow down to the statue. They said no. They violated those edicts, and they suffered the consequences, and God delivered them. He delivered the three Hebrew young men from the flames. He delivered Daniel from the lion's den. So there are times when that is done for the gospel, when the apostles were told strictly in Acts the 5th chapter, don't preach, don't preach. They went out and preached. They were flogged and told, don't preach in Jesus' name, and they went right out and never stopped teaching and preaching in Jesus' name. So when the government is forbidding us from sharing the gospel, then, as God is calling us to share the gospel, we have to do it with wisdom, we do it with love, we don't do it in a rebellious way against the government, but we do it in obedience to a higher authority. And when that higher authority says, go there, then you do it. You do it. That's the reality.
Agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. But with the North Sentinelese tribe, there was concern about bringing diseases that they weren't immune to.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Kind of
so that's where,
there.
That's where, yeah. And I addressed that in the first half hour of the broadcast today, saying that that's a key reason why you don't have outsiders come. Another is you don't want to bring an outside culture that could be very different or detrimental to the people there. And then you want to preserve indigenous cultures, which are rapidly vanishing from the planet. So yes, you do need to consider, okay, number one, we're not there to convert them to Americanism or Western ways or anything like that. We're there purely to share the gospel and let it work its way out in their culture. But
for sure,
the disease issue, those things need to be carefully looked at. And
so
either
was
you need
missionary wrong.
In no,
how
I don't.
He went about reaching them.
Okay, I know more behind the scenes because of I read firsthand someone who worked closely with him what happened behind the scenes. I'm just not at liberty to share any of that. I believe that he took the necessary precautions that needed to be taken and that he was fully aware of the potential issues. The question is, once he got there and was greeted the way he was. Was it wise to proceed again, or did there need to be a more systematic approach over a period of time that little by little would open the door? Now, remember, Jim Elliot, Nate Saint, and the colleagues that were martyred in the 1950s by the Aka Indians, that they, little by little, built relationship, little by little, reached out, little by little, and then they ended up getting martyred anyway, you know? That can still happen. So we can debate that. In other words, is it wiser? Wait a little while? Because otherwise, somebody's got to go to get there, right? At some point, somebody has to go. And so that has to be overcome. You know, the fear of disease, the fear of this, importing something contagious. Ultimately, someone has to go. And we trust if the Lord sends someone that the Lord is wise to these things as well. So you look at everything you can, as clearly as you can, as cautiously as you can. So the question is, once he was greeted the way he was and was speared the first day and hit his Bible, but he was able to leave, should he have come back the next day? Should he have waited? Those are things between him and God, you know? And maybe there was a better way that over a period of time could have better opened a door and made an entry point where the gospel could get to these people loved by God and for whom Jesus died. And it's a very fair question to ask, Joel, and you're asking it in a 100% legitimate way. But I know you'd agree with me that it's easy for us to sit here in the comfort of our homes and discuss whether it was the wisest way. I want to honor a man that said, Lord, I think I'm of more use to you alive, but if I have to die, I'll do it. You say, well, what good came out of it? Well, now you have people all around the world praying for the Sentinelese people. You're certainly going to have someone that God sends back there. And I believe success will come in these people. We hear the gospel. And you'll have a whole bunch of people talking about missions, talking about the unreached, and looking at John's example and saying, well, I want to go. And then what about your next door neighbor who's not going to spear you? He's actually a nice person, but you never shared the gospel with them and you lived there for 20 years. How about starting right there? Hey, Joel, thank you for your excellent questions. I want to take a few more questions when we come back. Stay right here.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, as I get ready to go back to India, trip number 26, God willing, leaving on Sunday. We've got great programming prepared for you. You don't want to miss a single day next week. You're going to be blessed, edified, helped, encouraged, strengthened. I really, really believe that. So don't miss a single broadcast next week and be in prayer that God will use me to be a blessing to my dear friends in India. And I'll share more with you when I get back. Okay, there are a few reasons for that. I'll share more with you about the trip afterwards, but it's possible that here and there I'll do a live stream from and put it on Facebook from India, if that works out. But all of our broadcasting going on as normal. It's going to be a very special week next week. But look, friends, when you support our ministry, you not only support me as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, you also help us reach Jewish people with the good news about Jesus every day of the week. You also help us support missionaries on the front lines all around the world, doing extraordinary work for God. I'm telling you, when we do our annual missions conference, just did our 19th last month, 19th annual missions conference. When we do those, we're in tears hearing the testimony of our missionaries. I say our missionaries, folks we send out, support that came through our school of ministry, the great majority of them, otherwise all of them deeply connected with us. Mind blowing what they're doing, how they're doing it. When you support us, you're supporting them as well. Just letting you know that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go over to Italy. Joel, where are you in Italy, sir?
I am in Vicenza. This is about 40 minutes from Venice, 40 minutes from Verona.
All right, great talking to you. I'm scheduled to be back in Naples in January. It'll be my 27th trip to Italy. But thanks for calling, sir. Your question.
Yes, Dr. Brown. So my question is, what do we have? I mean, I know what do we have to offer, but the question that some Muslim countries might have, what do you have to offer me when I have higher moral values than the West? How can you tell me to accept your message? I believe in Jesus to a certain degree. I don't believe he's God. I don't believe he's the son of God. I believe he's a prophet. So we might disagree in there, but I still believe in his message, and, you know, he will come back in the future and all this stuff. But why would I accept your views when your moral values are totally decayed when you compare to Qatar, Kuwait, rich Muslim countries, because you always talk about the poor Muslim countries where they have a lot of issues, but the rich Muslim countries where they have very high moral values and very conservative society, what would be the message for them?
Yeah, so number one, we tell them that America is not the gospel and Europe is not the gospel, that the reason that these nations are in the straits they're in terms of morality is because they've been rejecting the gospel. That's the first thing, because Muslims around the world, they think America, that's Christianity. So that's the first thing when you tell them, no, that's not the case. And there's only a tiny minority of Italians that are real Christians. So these countries are decadent because they reject the gospel. That's number one. Number two, many of these Muslim countries give a strong outward impression of high moral standards because they're enforced by the sword, so to say. But these people sin like everybody else. These people fall short like everybody else. And behind the scenes, there's all kinds of junk that goes on like anywhere else. And bottom line is they are very much aware of the fact that they sin. Because of Islam, they're very aware of the fact they sin. So our whole message is you can have forgiveness of sins. And no, you can know God as Father, because Muslims don't know God as Father. They can't even relate to that, because that would lower him, because they're just the creation. They're at best servants of Allah, not sons and daughters of a heavenly Father. You can tell them you can know that you know that you know that your sins are forgiven. The truth of the cross that Muslims don't know. So our message, the message of the gospel, is spreading incredibly in the Muslim world. Far more Muslims come into faith now in the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years than in many centuries before that. So the more those societies hear the message, the more they find forgiveness. And in countries going through upheaval, like Syria or Iraq, when there's so much persecution of Muslims killing Muslims, they see Christians and the way Christians live, and they're attracted to the gospel. So they should be attracted to our own lifestyle. They should be attracted to the fact that we have an intimate relationship with God. They should be attracted to the fact that through the cross, they can have their sins forgiven. They should see that in us, and it should be something that makes them jealous. So, Joel, wonderful question. But that would be the answer. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to West Virginia. Parker, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. I'm here because I have some insight to the issue that most people don't have. My church has been sending missionaries for over 30 years. We've sent placed people to Russia. We've sent people to China. We've sent people to South Africa. But this is really concerning because we currently have people in the country of North Korea.
Mm.
My question, like right now, I'm not going to name the family that's down there due to safety concerns. So my question is simple. This is really hard on me because they're currently in a prison camp right now, as far as I know. So,
oh, my.
They're right now in a prison camp somewhere in North Korea, up in a mountain somewhere, one of the worst of the worst. They are literally doctors actually preaching the gospel on the side, and that's how they got caught. Mm. My question is like, why do people go to places like Saudi Arabia and all these other places, and why North Korea? Why would you send somebody in North Korea? Like, I want to go to Malaysia as a missionary, but I'm scared to do it because of all the Sharia law that's going on. I don't know what to do.
Parker, thank you for being so honest and sharing this. Here's the deal. Our lives are not our own. It's not my life. It belongs to the Lord. I was speaking was on a TV show a couple months ago, and the gentleman was driving me back to the airport in Missouri, and he had served with special forces, been in Afghanistan, watched many of his friends die. And I asked him about it. He said, "We're expendable assets, sir. That's it. We're expendable assets. That, and when you go as military, you may die for your country, but you're expendable. You're there for a mission." I thought, wow, to have that attitude as a soldier, how much more have that attitude as a follower of Jesus? My life's not my own. It belongs to him. If he says, "I want you to live to be 90 years old and see great, great, great grandchildren and be the richest person in your community and give money to the poor," so be it. If he says, "I want you to preach on the street corner today and you'll die," so be it. Our lives are not our own. We belong to him. If you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for his sake in the gospel, you find it. So you want God to be sending you to Malaysia or these other countries. You want to be sent by God, but it could just be the burden in your heart is deep, and that's his sending. And you face the fear. "God, I don't want to die. And I don't think I could survive prison or torture, but if you want me to go, I'll go, because my life belongs to you." And I can tell you that the few times that I've been in situations where literally we knew there could be a physical attack. I mean, in one case, a stage taken over by radicals with knives and razor blades in their hands. I didn't see the guys with the weapons, but we had guys came on the stage, took the mics away from us, shut the meeting down, turned the power off in the whole community. And then we thought, we don't know if we're going to get out of here in one piece. And a couple of other, three times max, I was in situations that were potentially life-threatening, or at least you have a beating coming. The only concern I had was telling the people about the Lord. It was the only concern. And the uglier the threats got, the more I wanted to stay. Why? Because there's grace there. Why do people go to North Korea? Because it's a dark country. It's the most persecuted country on the planet. And there are people dying without Jesus. So missionaries go. That's why we go. But the fact is, not just missionaries. None of us. My life doesn't belong to me. I address controversial issues, not because I get excited about it, but because God called me to. And some, look, I've been warned many a time, if you do this, there's going to be a penalty for it. And you must have police protection and this and that. And that's not the issue. The issue is, "Lord, what do you want me to do?" I'm not being foolish. I'm not being reckless. But my life for the gospel, that's normal thinking. All right. Phone lines are jammed here. I'm virtually out of time. Lee in Tennessee, you've got literally seconds. If you can share something really quick, I'll do my best to respond.
Hey, Dr. Brown, thanks so much for taking my call today.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm a fire graduate and work at a missionary agency. So I had several things I wanted to say, but...
Yeah, but it's got to be real quick. Real quick.
So I've been reading lots of reports, and I'm aware of, you know, different parts. Like the colonizers previously had reached the people. A lot of the indigenous people were killed, their numbers were greatly reduced because of it. So people are saying that these are unreached people, but to me, it sounds like they have been reached and it's not gone well.
Let me just say this. All that I've read, that is not the case, that there was one man, an anthropologist, who made contact with them decades ago and established just a bit of a relationship, but nothing more came of that. Otherwise, people claim they've lived isolated on the island for something like 60,000 years. We may not accept those dates, but anyway, not from what I've read, but even so, I understand the fear of colonization. I understand the fear of bringing in outside culture. I understand the concern about importing diseases and all that. None of that had anything to do with why this brother was going to share the love of God with others. Hey, listen, let's do what we can where we live to make Jesus known, regardless of cost or consequence. Can we do that?